today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
You know, a man or a woman may wish that they could fly like a bird. I kind of wish that. That'd be cool, right? Yeah, oh man, you flap your arms. Woo, I can fly. Wouldn't that be great? I'd love that. But there's very little sense of meaninglessness in the heart or the mind of a man or a woman because they cannot fly like a bird. Nobody walks around saying, my life is meaningless because I can't fly like a bird.
Some people talk about having a destiny in their lives, to do some heroic act or in pursuing a particular vocation. Often, though, people find that reaching that goal doesn't provide the fulfillment they thought it would. Pastor David will be continuing his teaching in Ecclesiastes, following Solomon's pursuit of ultimate meaning. Pastor David will be sharing and expanding on how God made us to have an intimate relationship with him and touching on our dissatisfaction outside of that association. Now, here's Pastor David with part two of his message, Time, Eternity, and Despair.
Verse 13, I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Okay, great. It's better to be wise than it is to be foolish, right? Should we take a show of hands on this, right? What's better, wisdom or foolishness? Right, I think we understand that. Okay, Solomon, we got the point. But then notice he's going to deliver the hammer blow at the end of verse 14. Yet I myself perceived that the same event happens to them all. Do you know what the same event is? Death. You die. And in an under-the-sun world, with an under-the-sun premise, if this life is all there is, if your body goes into the grave and rots and that all there is, then you know what? Everything you accomplished means nothing. You say, well, no, it means something for my children. Well, he'll talk about that in a minute. Friends, in an under-the-sun world, death makes all things meaningless. The preacher saw the meaninglessness of even wise living, of legitimate pleasures, and of accomplishment lived in a life under the sun, apart from the knowledge of eternity and of a God who really matters. You see, no matter how wise one is or is not, no matter how much they do or do not accomplish, no matter how much pleasure one has or does not have, the same event happens to them all. They all die. And given the preacher's premise that eternity and God do not ultimately matter, this is the only possible conclusion. And you can see how it tortures him. Look at what he says in verse 15. So I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And why then was I more wise? Well, congratulations. I'll be the wisest man to have his life mean nothing and have it destroyed when I die. What, did they give you some kind of ribbon for that? But who cares? I'm gone. It's meaningless. If death ends it all, then this life is robbed of true meaning. And even the good and great accomplishments of the world are unbelievably temporary and therefore ultimately meaningless. The wise man dies just as the fool. And truly the preacher looked at this, and at the end of verse 15, he says, this also is vanity. And then you saw it very powerfully in verse 17, where he says, therefore I hated life. For all is vanity and grasping for the wind. Now again, given his premise of life under the sun, Solomon hated life because it was so meaningless. It was vanity. It was grasping for the wind. You can picture that, can't you? Somebody trying to grab the wind. How's that working out for you? You can't do it, can you? It's meaningless. It has no purpose. I like what Derek Kidner said about this phrase, therefore I hated life. He said this, if there is a lie at the center of existence and nonsense at the end of it, who has the heart to make anything of it? Another thing Derek Kidner says here, he says, the preacher, he has no illusions about it. He knows it all ends. And then meditating on it even further, he saw that it was even worse than he thought. Verse 18. Then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me, right? I'll leave it to my kids. That's a solution. That'll give my life meaning. Look at the next line. And who knows whether he'll be wise or a fool? Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I've toiled, in which I've shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Therefore, I turned my heart and despaired of all the labor in which I had toiled under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. For what has man for all his labor and all the striving of his heart with which he has toiled under the sun? For all his days are sorrowful and his work burdensome. Even in the night, his heart takes no rest. This also is vanity. You see, not only did Solomon hate life under this thinking, he hated even the accomplishments of his life. He said, I hated all my labor. He said of all of them, this is vanity. You see, the idea that Solomon might leave all of his work and all of his material wealth to a fool seemed to trouble him. And can I say something? That concern was well-founded because he left all of it to his son, Rehoboam. By the way, just a little throwaway line here. Did you know that Solomon, even though he had 700 wives and 300 concubines, he had one son that we know of, one heir, and he was a fool. His name was Rehoboam. And you can just imagine Solomon. I don't know if he could see it when he wrote Ecclesiastes or he just thought about the possibility of it, but it drove him crazy. Look at all I've accomplished, and I got to leave it to him? Truly, it's meaningless. Rehoboam turned out to be a fool in many ways. And it drove him crazy. He says, there's a man whose labor is with wisdom and knowledge and skill, yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. Under his premise, life under the sun, death haunted Solomon. Not in the sense that he was afraid to die, but that he despaired of how death, if death ends our existence, how it makes all meaningless. Therefore, he goes so far to say that all his days are sorrowful, his work burdensome, even in the night his heart takes no rest. If death robs all of our work of meaning, then life indeed is sorrowful, work is burdensome, and there's no rest or relief from the despair of a meaningless life. Surely also it is vanity. Could I say this? It's actually worse than vanity. The preacher observed that in an under-the-sun world, it's also evil. This is a great evil, he says at the end of verse 21. It's worse than vanity. Now, in dealing with all this, I hope there's nobody here too depressed by all of this, even though, boy, this is tough stuff, isn't it? But in this, the preacher hints at a vital question. Why does this bother us? Really? Let's just step into an under-the-sun world for a minute, right? In an under-the-sun world, let's say you believe in materialistic evolution, that God has nothing to do with creation, that we're just here by fortunate circumstances and all the rest of it. There's no meaning to life or existence. And when you die, brother, sister, you're dead. That's it. Let's enter into that kind of world just for a moment. Why does that bother us? If that's how it's been since millions or billions of years, and that's where we are right now, it should be so programmed into us that it shouldn't bother us just for a moment. If every thought of an internal meaning to life is a wish and a fantasy, then why does that idea, the idea that there is no eternity, that there is no life after this, why does it cause discontent in most everyone? You know, a man or a woman may wish that they could fly like a bird. I kind of wish that. That'd be cool, right? Yeah, well, man, you flap your arms. Woo, I can fly. Wouldn't that be great? I'd love that. But there is very little sense of meaninglessness in the heart or the mind of a man or a woman because they cannot fly like a bird. Now, nobody walks around saying, my life is meaningless because I can't fly like a bird. But listen, there's something deep in the soul of a man or a woman that says, if this life is all there is, then it is meaningless. Now, what's the difference between the two? I'll tell you the difference between the two. You were never designed to fly like a bird in an airplane, fine. You were never designed to fly like a bird. You were designed for eternity. And the thought that there is no eternity, that life has no ultimate meaning, it bothers us. I don't think it bothers your dog or your cat. It certainly doesn't bother your goldfish. But it bothers us. Why? Because we are engineered for eternity. Man was not designed to fly like a bird, but he is designed for eternity. And that's why it bothers. Well, why wouldn't Solomon write? And you know that Solomon's speaking the truth here. He's resonating with our own hearts. He says, you know, why doesn't he just say, yeah, whatever. Okay, I die. Who cares? We all do. C'est la vie. He doesn't say that, does he? It bothers him deeply, and it bothers us. Now, verse 25. He sort of shifts gears, verse 24, I should say. He shifts gear just a little bit. Here, now he's going to talk about how we should live life under the sun. Follow his thinking here. He says, nothing is better for a man that he should eat and drink and that the soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. For who can eat or who can have enjoyment more than I? You see, the thought is prominent in Ecclesiastes. This idea that we find in verse 24, hey, man, just eat and drink and enjoy life. That thought is repeated something like five times in the book of Ecclesiastes. It seems that the preacher is advising us how to make the best of a bad situation. Saying, listen, guys, okay, ring the bell. Life is meaningless. We're living life under the sun. It is meaningless, so make the best of a bad thing. Eat and drink and enjoy your life, but don't even hope for meaning. Don't even hope for real purpose. You see, if life really as despairing and as meaningless as he has shown it to be, then we should simply accept that true meaning is impossible to find and simply find contentment in moderate and responsible pleasures. And by the way, isn't this thinking prominent in our day? Few people live for true eternal meaning with their life. That they live in the under the sun kind of rules. And so they try to work hard, enjoy life, have fun, be nice. If you do bad things, don't get caught, and try not to hurt anybody. Isn't that the basic code people live by today? Now listen, I'll be the first one to agree. This thinking may work in making a bad situation better, but it gives no true meaning to life in light of eternity. And that's why he can even say, there in verse 25, this also I saw was from the hand of God. See, here we see that the preacher's no atheist. He certainly believes in God, but the God of the preacher, at least under his under the sun premise, the God of the preacher is not the God who matters. He's not the God who gives meaning to life as he's connected in eternity. Maybe he's the grandfatherly old God with the big beard and the rocking chair up in heaven, right? Oh, there's a God, but he doesn't really matter. The God of the preacher simply teaches us to make the best of a bad situation. And so he really collapses down into fatalism. I like what G. Campbell Morgan said about this. He said, everything is vanity. To live under the sun is to decide at last that the natural thing to do is to just take what comes. Materialism necessarily becomes fatalism. And Solomon says, well, I can do that. For who can eat and drink and who can have enjoyment more than I? Given the preacher's premise, his life should be the best in a meaningless world. He could enjoy this world of despair better than anyone else. Yet his life was almost infinitely more poor than the most humble life lived with true meaning. You know, you'll meet people. I'll speak honestly. Maybe you're one of those people. By human observation, on the under the sun kind of scale, you got everything. You got it all. But if you're not living your life for eternal meaning, your life has no meaning. The words of the preacher resonate with your heart in the book of Ecclesiastes. I'll say this to you, sir or ma'am, who seems to have everything and then under the sun kind of rules. You are almost infinitely poorer than the most simple man or woman who has true eternal meaning to their life. And if you were wise, you would do everything you could to believe in the God of the Bible and the eternity that is to come, and to realize that your life, your deeds, your aspirations will be judged in light of eternity. And then here in verse 26, he almost gives a throwaway line. He says, "For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who's good in his sight. But to the sinner, he gives the work of gathering and collecting, that he may give to him who's good before God. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind." You see, Solomon reflected on how sometimes it seems that what the sinner has gathered and collected is given to him who is good before God. Now, that might seem unjust, but under the sun, sometimes injustice seems to work in someone's favor. So he says, okay, great. This is also vanity and grasping for the wind. Even this seeming or sometimes redistribution from God's hand was not enough to give true meaning to life lived under the sun. So we leave chapter 2 on this very downbeat note. We come into chapter 3 and to see him sort of discussing another idea in this premise. Verse 1. "To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones. A time to embrace, a time to refrain from embracing. A time to gain, a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time of war and a time of peace." It's a beautiful section, isn't it? Of course, you can't really say those lines without thinking of that great bird song running through your mind, right? You can hear the guitar riff even as I'm mentioning that. "Listen, to everything there is a season and a purpose, a time for every purpose under heaven." This list that describes the different seasons and facets of life, it's a beautiful list and it's very beautifully written, is it not? Yet it also casts a very dark shadow, because it reminds us of the inevitability of trouble and evil and of the relentless monotony of life. You see, the repetition of a time and a time and a time, after a while, it almost seems oppressive to us. I like what Derek Kidner said about this. He says, "Whatever may be our skill and our initiative, our real masters seem to be these unstoppable seasons. Not only those of the calendar, but of that tide of events which moves us from one now to one kind of action which seems to be fitting, and another which puts it all into reverse." Let me put it this way. Do you ever feel like you're a slave to the calendar? Don't even raise your hand on that one. Right? It's a terrible feeling, isn't it? Sometimes it doesn't make you feel more than that life is meaningless. When you really feel like you're a slave to the calendar, that one day passes, the events just, you're under dominion of time and the events, and this comes and that comes, and you got no control over it all. You're just in bondage to this. That's how we felt. And even though it's beautifully said, so beautifully that when the birds did that song, "Turn, Turn, Turn," they didn't write it. Pete Seeger wrote it. But when they did that song, it became a number one hit. Did you know Solomon had a number one hit in the U.S.? I hope they gave him the songwriting credit for that, but I don't think they did. Notice how it begins, this list in verse 2. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to break down, a time to build up. Birth and death, these are the boundaries of life under the sun. So that's mentioned first. And in this whole list, a bad facet answers each good facet. Yeah, there's good things like birth, but then there's bad things like death. There's good things like building up. There's bad things like breaking down. The preacher understood that even though there are good things in life, the bad things can't be escaped. They say that in ancient Egypt, when they were having a party, when they were having a feast, a banquet, that they would pass around a little coffin, little toy, almost coffin to everybody in the midst of the party, basically to say to everybody, hey, you're having a good time now, but you're going to die. I don't know if that's a great way to run a party or not, but it sounds a lot like Ecclesiastes, doesn't it? Yeah, you may be having a good day, a good week, a good occurrence, beautiful, but don't ever forget that good thing in the life, that birth of the child, it's going to be offset by a death somewhere. That beautiful planting of something, something else is going to get plucked up. That embrace is going to be coupled to a refraining from embracing. You get the point. Over and over again. What I like about the poetic quality of this list, the beauty in this list, is it shows us that even the tragic, dark aspects of life can be artistically and powerfully presented. I see that in a lot of the art of this world. A lot of the music, a lot of the film, a lot of the novels, a lot of the writing. I find that oftentimes people who don't know God at all can very artfully and sometimes beautifully describe the lost condition of mankind. What they can't tell you is the solutions. But man, if you want the problem, the world can tell it to you. Because they see it. They know it, just like Solomon ached because of it. In verse 9, we have something. I don't want you to get too excited about this. But in verse 9, we see a glimmer of hope. Enjoy it, because you're not going to get much of this until the end of the book. But just for a moment, Solomon lifts his eyes up to eternity. See what I mean? Verse 9. What profit has the worker from that which he labors? I've seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He's made everything beautiful in its time. He has also put eternity in their hearts. Except that no man can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. First in verse 9, he asks the question, what profit has the worker from that which he labors? I've seen the God-given task which the sons of men are to be occupied. The preacher asked the kind of question he had asked before, but this time he found an answer. The God-given task that God gives to man. All right there, that's meaning for your life, isn't it? If you believe that God mattered and he actually gave you a task to do in this world, that changes everything, doesn't it? Suddenly your life isn't meaningless. Suddenly your life has a purpose. God gave me something to do, and I'm going to do it unto his glory. And then he says next that he's made everything beautiful in its time. And this is consideration of the poetic list in the previous section. Solomon thought of the good and the bad as they were described. And he says, listen, God makes it all beautiful in its time. But then he says something glorious in verse 11. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts. The preacher understood that man has an awareness and a longing for the eternal, and that God has put it in their hearts. We can say that eternity is in our hearts because we are made in the image of an eternal God. Isn't that beautiful? Friends, he's programmed you this way.
We're so glad you joined us today on Enduring Word Radio. Pastor David's study through the book of Ecclesiastes continues to show us God's power and provision in the midst of the chaos of this world. We hope the words you heard today have touched you and encouraged you in your spiritual walk. We'd like to encourage you to visit our website at enduringword.com, where you'll find previous messages by Pastor David free to listen to or download. You can also subscribe to our Enduring Word Radio podcast. In this busy world, it's hard to set aside time to study the Bible in depth. We've tried to make that a little easier for you. By subscribing to our podcast, you'll have sound biblical teachings with you on the go, right on your smartphone, tablet, or computer. Find a link to our podcasts under the media tab at enduringword.com. Right now, we'd like to take a moment to tell you how you can be involved in this ministry. Programs like this are valuable ministry tools God uses to expand His kingdom here on earth, and we feel so blessed to be a part of that with Enduring Word. As with any ministry, though, there are significant costs involved. Would you prayerfully consider supporting the ministry of Enduring Word financially? You can find out more by visiting enduringword.com and clicking on donate. Thank you for taking this matter before the Lord. That's all the time we have for today. Be sure to tune in again as Pastor David presents more from the book of Ecclesiastes right here on Enduring Word.